Today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1 with Allcare Pharmacy. Discover a healthcare team that's always here for you at Allcare Pharmacy, Ireland's largest community pharmacy network.
Email todaycb@rte.ie.
So as I was saying, we are moving on with our beginner's guide to some of the best music stars of all time. The idea, we take a band or a singer that you think you know, but we show you why you need to take a deeper dive into their back catalogue. Last time we talked about Amy Winehouse. Today, well, we're going to talk about one of the all-time greats. Yeah, that's right. We're talking about Prince with DJ and radio presenter Kellyanne Byrne. Good morning. How are you?
I'm good. Great. How are you doing?
Do you know what's most amazing? This is an old man kind of thing to say.
Right.
But he was only 26 when he wrote and performed that song.
Yeah, incredible. 26 with six studio albums under his belt. I mean,
six already,
most commercially successful. But this was really the moment when even I think he silenced critics. People just realised what an amazing talent that he was. It was the start of his work with The Revolution. A little bit of a change of direction musically, as in it's more rocky, as you can hear in this track. But yeah, just a phenomenal talent. Imagine being 26 and having that amount of work under your belt already.
What age was he signed at?
17.
Oh my God.
Yeah, 17.
Okay. Let's do it from the beginning. Take me back to the start.
Yeah. So, okay, Prince was from a very musical family. He wrote his first song when he was seven. His mother was a jazz singer, and his father was a jazz pianist. And the dad taught him piano, and the story goes that he was so strict.
Very hard on him, yeah.
Very hard on him. Do it again, not good enough. But Prince later said in life that that's what made him become the perfectionist that he was. So a very musical family. He wrote his first song when he was seven, was in his first band when he was... I know, there's no talent like this today.
Oh my God.
Yeah.
I mean, Mozart is the most obvious comparison, isn't it, really, when you think about it?
Yeah.
Okay, so after seven, what dizzying heights did he go on to?
So he was really badly bullied at school, and he decided, I'm going to become such a brilliant musician that everybody is going to stand up and take notice. So by the time he was 16, he was known as the new Stevie Wonder.
And he played, and not just the one instrument.
Exactly. He was a multi-instrumentalist. And then what later happened, as we know, was he was signed at 17 for his first album. Reason being, this is a great story. Someone took a demo to his future manager, Owen Husney. And Owen Husney took a listen and said, who is this band? I love the voice. I love the guitarist. I love this. And they said, that's one guy doing absolutely everything.
God.
Yeah.
So who signed him?
Warner Brothers signed him when he was just 17. Yeah, and the first album was called For You. It wasn't a major commercial success, but again, I think it just made people see how talented he was. It was really the next record, self-titled Prince, when people began to hear him globally with the release of I Want to Be Your Lover.
Let us take a listen to that. You know what's really interesting culturally about that now is long before anybody had ever put the words gender and fluid into the same sentence, he was playing around with all of that stuff.
You said it, like David Bowie. I mean, the earliest images were very androgynous. Like, it's Prince in thigh-high boots, a pair of panties, with a jacket with giant shoulder pads, strutting his stuff on the stage. not caring, not with a thought in the world. And as you said, nobody talked about gender fluidity then. He really broke so many rules in terms of sexuality, gender, race. The image was so strong. And there's a story that he actually supported the Rolling Stones early in his career, and he was booed off the stage because of his appearance. But he never gave up. He was totally determined, you know, to be who he was. But yeah.
Explain this phenomenon to me, though, because I remember all of us lads back in the early 1980s were looking at him in the thigh-high boots and the ladies' underwear and so on and going, look at the state of your man. Yeah. But all of our female friends were looking at him and were saying, look at the state of your man. And we were missing, us fellas, were missing a trick. Why? What was the appeal for girls?
That's interesting. Well, maybe because we could see ourselves in him. But I do think, you know, it's interesting you asked about the women thing. I think why women really loved Prince was because Prince always had female members in his band. That was a huge thing. Wendy and Lisa.
Sheila E.
Sheena Easton. Then afterwards, Rosie Gaines on keyboards. So I think for me, when I was a kid, I didn't fancy Prince. I still don't.
Okay.
I just was so enamored with his talent. And I just remember like watching the videos and thinking, oh, look at those girls. Like, I want to be like that. They were so sexy, but so talented with it. And I think that's one of the reasons why women love him.
There were times, weren't there, when the entire lineup behind him was female?
100%. There's a performance, actually.
And that wasn't a tokenistic thing, or it wasn't about him at the head of his harem or anything like that. They were there because of musical talent.
You said it, and that's really important to point out. You did not get into Prince's band unless you were good at what you did. He surrounded himself with excellence. And like you say, it wasn't tokenism. Actually, the look of the band, The Revolution, was based on Sly and the Family Stone. A mix of race, a mix of gender. So yeah, but I feel like he always supported women throughout his career. And I think that might be the reason, like you say, in the beginning, that maybe females were more attracted to him.
Let's take a listen to what is perhaps, after Born in the USA, the most misunderstood song ever written by anybody. 1999. Quite a feat, isn't it, to turn a song about fear of nuclear apocalypse and Holocaust into a party anthem?
Yeah, absolutely. Like, when we hear that, we think of like going out and dancing all night. But the story behind that record is Prince and his band were watching an HBO documentary about 1999, which a lot of people thought, will it be the end of the world, you know, back in the 80s. And he said there was such a feeling of doom and gloom in the room. And he was like, come on, guys. So he went and he wrote this kind of tongue-in-cheek record. Well, look, if we're all going to die, we're going to go out partying. And it's just such an uplifting song. It's one that you can play today and people just absolutely love it.
I know. And the worst that we had to worry about was Y2K. It really funny, isn't it? Come back to the women thing and writing for women as well. I mean, the amount of people from the Bangles to Sinead O'Connor that he wrote songs for is amazing.
The Bangles, Manic Monday. A lot of people don't know that. Obviously, the biggest one is Nothing Compares to You, which Sinead O'Connor really made her own. And then he wrote I Feel For You for Chaka Khan.
Had he released Nothing Compares to You?
He had, yes. He had originally released that back in, I can't remember. It was very, very early in his career. And it's a very sparse recording, the original one. Then he did a version with Rosie Gaines singing. But the story of that is apparently it's about his housekeeper.
Go on, really?
Yeah.
Not about a lost lover?
Not about a lost lover, not about his mother. He later on, his engineer, Susan Rogers, said in an interview that she believed it was about his housekeeper. Yeah, that basically his housekeeper, who had worked with him for years, went back to live with her father. Sorry, her father had died and she went back to live with her family. And Prince wrote this song about her because she used to do everything for him domestically. Which kind of shows how sensitive he was.
I'm just trying to run through the lyrics in my head. It makes kind of sense in retrospect. I go and listen to that now with a whole new set of ears. What was he like as a live performer?
Oh my God. Unbelievable. I saw him when I was 10. 10 years old.
You were what?
10.
Are you serious?
My uncle took me to see him. I went, my two uncles and my brother. And honestly, I can remember that like yesterday. I remember what I was wearing. I remember him on the stage jumping from instrument to instrument. He could play 50 instruments. I remember the dancers. I just remember it being such an immersive experience. He was very generous as a performer. Kate Bush said when he died that he was the greatest performer of all time.
Coming from Kate Bush, that's something else, yeah. Isn't it? The live performance that is still probably most remembered and most talked about is the 2007 Super Bowl.
Oh, here. Have you seen it?
Mm-hmm.
It's incredible. And everybody listening, please go and watch this. So the day of the performance, it started to rain very heavily and the artistic director rang him and said, look, he was panicking. You know it's raining. And Prince's words were, make it rain harder. And you see him playing Purple Rain with two dancers. They're all wearing stilettos on a tiled floor, drenched, absolutely drenched. Nobody misses a beat. He was that talented. It looked like it was part of the act.
Oh, it did, didn't it? I actually thought for years afterwards that they were pouring rain on them from the top of the stage.
Absolutely. And I think that's the ability of a great performer is they can make mistakes or disasters look like it's part of what they do. And he was just so naturally gifted as a performer. Just incredible.
And gifted as a lyricist and a writer. Just wrap your ears around this one again.
September, my cousin tried reefer for the very first time. Now he's doing horse. It's June.
In France, a skinny man dies of a disease with a little disease. I've said big disease with a little name.
Yeah.
Nobody was writing about AIDS at that stage, were they?
You said it. Who opened a record with that? I mean, it was so brave. And that's the thing. That whole song, like as you mentioned there, AIDS, drug abuse, talking about gangs, poverty. Lyrically, it's just unbelievable. It's probably my favourite Prince song of all time. It still gets me today because the words still ring true. And I think that with this record, Sign of the Times, he was more mature. It was the first kind of social, political record that he wrote. But musically, it's very sparse. And that's what's interesting about it. That's why you listen to the lyrics, I think.
Now, the thing that came to him being called the artist formerly known as Prince wasn't artifice, wasn't some sort of a notion. There was a good reason behind doing that.
Absolutely, yeah. He wanted to own his masters, you know, and still to this day, not many people do. And he got into a big argument with them and he started to wear this sign on his face. And I remember that at the time, do you, people in the media like, oh God, this idiot, blah, 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 blah. But if you think about it, he was way ahead of his time because he stood up for himself, which only George Michael really has done since.
Yes, Swifties, listen to that. Prince was the person who forged the path here. There's another song, a less obvious, a less likely song that I want to play just before we leave this. And that's his cover of a Joni Mitchell, which is just a beautiful, beautiful song, A Case of You.
Sure, you touch mine, part of you pours out of me from time to time. These lines. In my bloodline, holy wine, you're so bitter,
so bitter,
so sweet. Oh,
I could drink a case of you,
darling.
Still be on my
feet. Credit to Joni Mitchell for the line, I could drink a case of you.
Yeah.
But why, when I mentioned that song, did you put your hand over your mouth and give a sudden sharp intake of breath?
I actually have a lump in my throat now. I just think it's so stunning. I get emotional every time I hear this song. And he really was obsessed with Joni Mitchell. I guess talent recognises talent. He used to send her fan mail when he was a teenager, which for us to think of Prince being in awe of somebody, you know, is kind of, he never really mentioned influences, but
and
he adored her.
She picked him out in the audience of one of her concerts.
He was at one of her concerts when he was 15. And she said, I remember looking and seeing the big eyes. He was by himself with his collar up and he literally just looked from side to side. And I think they later worked together, actually. And she said he was incredible in the studio. But yeah, he loved her. But it's a stunning cover. It really is.
Let's hear him covering the Sinead O'Connor song, shall we? This is the one. When was it? We'll find out when it was that he recorded and released this before Sinead O'Connor.
I think it was 82.
82.
I think.
Okay.
I could put my arms around every girl I see, but they only remind me of you.
That might be the only time that somebody got the better of Prince. Kellyanne Byrne, DJ and radio presenter, thank you very much for that. Today's programme was produced by Alistair McConnell, researcher Emma Cawley, broadcast coordinator Louise Kerr-Ross, and on sound, Aisling Grufferty. Now, here at just coming up to 12 o'clock, Ray Cudahy.